I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
We're back. The second round is good. All the series are good because all the good teams are playing each other now instead of later. But that's neither here nor there. We have to accept it. That's the thing that we have come to accept, I guess. I don't know. All the series are 1-1. The Leafs are out. The Atlanta Thrashers are back, baby. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about. This is Biscuits Calling a Hockey Podcast. I'm Dave. The subtitle could be Down Goes Brown, a Leafs funeral that we'll get to in the second half of the show, along with our interview with Henrik Sedin that we have, a little 7-8 minute interview about his time in Vancouver and what it means to be a Vancouver Canuck. Well, that'll be a little thing to kind of, a little chaser after all the playoff talk. And Sean, how are you, buddy? How are things?
Hey, you know what? I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
I'm in the recovery process.
Still grieving? Are you beyond that?
Well, you know, it never really goes away. It's just
it's always there.
More,
it's just there.
Yeah, it's just, you know, throw another one on the pile. And here we go.
All right. Well, we'll get to your sadness later because we want to be happy and positive.
Let's focus on the living. Let's focus on the eight teams.
Yes.
That are, because you're right. Like I feel like the second round has already been better than the first round, even if he stopped it right now.
I saw a thing last night. They said this was the first time all four series were 1-1 through two games since like 1990 something or other. They said it during the Vegas game. My ears had been bleeding since the Pierre Maguire game at 7 o'clock, so I couldn't really hear that well by like 11:30. But yeah, this has been a really good second round for sure.
Yeah, and it's four good matchups, four interesting matchups, and like, I hate, you know, I've seen other people do this where you, like, you almost don't want to say, I could see all four of these games, series going for seven games, because then it's a week from now and we're like, well, they all ended in five and that was terrible, but it could all be headed that way.
Yeah.
Like they've all been, and I guess like we'll jump around and kind of hit on each of them. Did you stay up for the overtime?
I don't miss a Caps game, and I don't miss a Vegas Golden Knights game. I'm a huge fan of those two organizations, and have been for upwards of like 4 weeks for both teams. And I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, how we're all trying to explain why the Golden Knights keep winning, and like we just have to stop because there's just really no explanation, man. Like Marc-Andre Fleury forever was just a terrible playoff goaltender. He always found a way to lose games, and now he's making like the save of the century on Logan Couture in overtime. And not that every team would lose a game after they blew a 2-goal lead in the third period, but just William Karlsson just sniping from like 40 feet out, top shelf, under the bar. William Karlsson, like we've come to accept now over the last 6 months that William Karlsson is just going to do that. William Karlsson, this is where we are. And now Vegas is the only team at this point that's up 2-1 in a series. And we talked about this in the first round, how the Kings and the Knights played a close series, but it was kind of a slog. This is just good hockey, man, and it's great. I love it. And the Vegas Golden Knights are going to the conference finals. It's over now, clinched.
What are your thoughts? Are we like, is it inevitable now that we're going to get the backlash to this Vegas story? Because I feel like up till now, most people have kind of been on board and it's been fun and a good story. But I'm getting the sense now that people are like, okay, that's about enough. Like,
I'm not getting that. No, not at all.
Like, I'm getting a sense from fans. Like, I'm certainly getting the feeling that Vegas winning the cup would be a turnoff for a lot of people. Everyone. Like, some people, the more the better, it'd be great. But I feel like there's a big chunk of people who are kind of like, all right, having like an expansion team come in and actually win a cup or play for a cup in year one is kind of maybe taking the whole thing a little bit too far.
It's great because, like, it exposes how, again, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but it exposes how bad GMs are, things we've all been saying for years. And now this is sort of like shining a light on that. And I get it. Like, totally. I understand. Like, if you're, say, hypothetically a Leafs fan and your team hasn't really done anything in like a really long time, and now this team just shows up and is like, hey, what's up? We got Jonathan Marchessault. That's all we need. Riley Smith. We're good. Yeah, I can see how that can be bothersome, but I'll tell you right now, if Vegas is playing for the Stanley Cup against any team that's left, I don't see how you're not rooting for Vegas. I don't say you're not rooting for Vegas already. It's like Vegas is essentially like that 11 seed in the NCAA tournament that moves on and starts playing for the Final Four or playing in the Final Four. This is kind of where we are. I don't know. I feel like maybe your mentions are just littered with bitter Leafs fans at this point.
Could be. But it's honestly like I don't find it. I don't think it's the Leafs fans. I think it's just kind of spread around the league. And the other thing, and this is the part of it that I can't buy into. I get that why some people would feel like, you know, like we all love when a 16 seed or a 15 seed wins the first game of March Madness, but you don't necessarily want to see them win the championship. So I get that. Here's the part I don't get. And here's the part I can't get on board with, because I'm seeing more and more of this, is people basically treating this as if like, yeah, of course the Knights were good.
Yeah, right.
The expansion draft was rigged so that they would have this great team.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And like have you seen people
Oh, for sure. People are, yeah, it was rigged so that Vegas could get Derek Englund. Yeah, sure.
Like, of course they were going to be good. Like, you know, this, you know, which I, if you're not on board or if you're starting to like to feel like you're going into backlash mode, go ahead. But don't act like this isn't a surprise. Don't act like
it's insanely nuts. It's so nuts. There's no other way to describe it.
They clearly got a better deal on their draft than most of the recent expansion teams. Like, I get if you're like a Senators fan or a Blue Jackets fan, you're looking at this going like, yeah, they had a easier starting point than we did. They also paid $500 million.
They also didn't just get the first pick in the draft. They didn't just show up picking,
you know, sixth or seventh, yeah. Where every other expansion team, I mean, most other expansion teams, their leading scorer in the first year is like the first or second overall draft pick that they got.
Right.
Like, so
Le Cavalier, you know, Rick Nash, right? Those were two guys that were the first overall picks those years, wasn't it? Did Le Cavalier come later? No, Le Cavalier came later. What am I talking about? Roman Hammerlick, I'm thinking of. But still.
Yeah, there are a bunch of guys like that. And the thing is, like, when they announced the rules, you can go back. Not one person, when those rules were announced, wrote the story that was like, well, now we know who's going to win the Pacific next year. Like, not one person wrote that. And when the draft happened,
we laughed.
Not one person was like,
we mocked them.
They got a cup contender. Yeah, we thought they like the at the time heading into the draft, it was like there was like the contrarian take that said they could, you know, they could actually be good if they pick all the right guys, they could be a playoff team. And then they picked their guys, and people were like, ah, no, they're not going to be playoff team. So I understand if you're not on board, I get it, but don't act like this isn't a borderline miracle that we're watching. Like, that's what I don't like, this fake, like, ho hum, well, what did we think was going to happen? We thought they were going to be in last.
And even if you thought they were going to be good, they spent two of the first 3 months without Marc-Andre Fleury. They had Malcolm Subban, and then he got hurt right away. And then they had this cavalcade of dudes. Yes. This is nuts.
None of it makes any sense. And I think maybe that's part of what's starting to chip away at my pro Vegas.
Oh no.
You know, it's just the fact, as somebody who both as a job and just as a fan likes to try to figure out how the NHL works, having something happen over the course of a full season that clearly doesn't make any sense, like, is a little bit off-putting.
I think
it's a little bit,
I think it's great.
You know,
it's great. Yeah. It's great because, like, I feel like we over-explain stuff. Like, I feel like in hockey, we don't necessarily embrace how much luck is involved. We want to, like, chalk it up to grit and jam and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, like, there's nothing. There's nothing that can explain. There's no stat. Like, I don't necessarily, like, you know me, I don't hate stats or anything. Like, but, like, I get a little exhausted by, like, exit velocity and routes and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And this is just great. Like, it's just, no one knows. No one understands why. No one has the answer. It's great. It's great kind of being free from all that stuff.
It is great, but I mean, the flip side is, this is going to end. Let's say Vegas wins the Stanley Cup. We go into the offseason. It's going to be, wow, we're going to have the Eric Carlson trade. We're going to have John Tavares. We're going to have, like, all this stuff. And, you know, oh, who improved? Who got better? Who? And there's going to be this undercurrent to it of, does any of this matter?
Oh,
like, an expansion team just won the Stanley Cup. So right. What are we even doing here? Should we even care? Should we, or do we just wait to the season and see what,
I love it,
what random outcome Plinko chips its way down to us by by June?
But, like, didn't we?
I don't know. Like, you can hear, like, I'm conflicted because I really, on the one hand, I'm like, how good is this? How much, like, you can't ask for a story that's more fun. And this is the sort of thing, if it goes one more round, this is going to start transcending hockey. Like, you're going to start seeing, you're already kind of seeing it a little bit, but this is going to become the big story in sports, not just the NHL, which is great for the NHL, an actual positive story, making the NHL the headline for once. So, you know, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, let's take this all the way. But at the same time, like, I see people jumping off the bandwagon, and there's a part of me that's like, I think I get it. I don't think I'm there yet, but I'm kind of like I'm still on the bandwagon, but I'm starting to, like, eye the emergency exit just in case.
I'm all for chaos, man. I'm all for chaos. And again, I think there was always an undercurrent of, no one knows what they're doing. They're just throwing stuff against the wall, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And no one ever really knows for sure. They just wear a nice suit and they call themselves hockey men and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, okay, that seems like an authority figure. Let's go with that. And now, like, this would blow that all up.
To me, it's fun to think that, like, half the league doesn't know what it's doing, but your team knows what they're doing. Like, as a fan, that's what you want, right? You want to be like, half these guys are morons, but we'll get the right guy and figure it out. And if you're just like, no, wait a second, what if everybody's a moron? Like, just nobody knows anything. And
beautiful.
It's just,
it's so beautiful.
It's going to be great. It's going to be so great when they miss the playoffs next year.
Yeah.
And, you know, George McPhee, like, Gerald Gallant gets fired like halfway through the year. No, it's all this. It's,
but that happens though. Like, there's been teams that get to the cup final or win the cup and then don't come back the next year. I mean, that doesn't happen as much anymore, but that's a thing. That's fine.
It happens. Yeah. It does happen. I don't know. I feel like I'm generally with you on Team Chaos, but I'm just wondering, like, is there a tipping point where it's too much? And do we hit that with the Knights? And I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that yet. I'm sort of on the fence, but I do know that I don't know if I'd say a lot of people have bailed, but it's definitely a significant number are already kind of done with this. And I think that's going to get worse as time goes on.
I think a thing that we both agree on is postseason refereeing is the worst thing that goes on in this sport. It's insane to me that we're even now at a point where, like, yeah, regular season, the playoffs, we get it. Stuff changes. If you murder a guy with 30 seconds to go in a tie game, they're not going to call it. And we all sort of accept that. But now we're at a point where I feel like we don't know anymore what the playoff bar is, where if you get tripped on a breakaway or you get slashed or hooked on a breakaway and it's a breakaway, they're not even calling that anymore. And, like, I watched that Bruins Lightning game. I don't have a dog in the fight, man. I don't care who wins. I don't care if I get my prediction right. But if you have a breakaway and a guy chops down on your stick and hands, gets your hands more than your stick, chops down on it, and it's not called, and I'm annoyed by it. Like, I can't imagine what's going on in New England this morning. Like, are there just dudes rumbling outside of Dunkin' Donuts all throughout, like, New Hampshire and Massachusetts because they have this pent-up anger from last night, and then some guy in the Dunkin' Donuts was like, would you call me? You call me a hazelnut? I don't know why he has a New York accent. I can't do a Boston accent. But I understand, like, at the end of that Boston-Tampa game, I think it was Pastrnak got just absolutely wrecked from behind while he was, like, playing the puck. I get not calling that. That's a thing that never gets called in the playoffs. It should be called, don't get me wrong. But the Marchand thing, people are telling me it's a stick lift. You can't lift a stick from above, my friend. That's not how a stick lift works. That's not lifting the stick.
My only defense on that is I'm going to invoke our new rule that we came up with a few weeks ago that – you can, if the other team commits a penalty and you start waving your arms around, that is the tattletale. 2 minutes for tattletaling, it negates the original penalty.
But that's how Kuznetsov got the penalty called in the Caps game when Letang tackled him. Well, and like, he finally was
also
like,
"That's the only way to get goalie interference called these days." Like, I feel like none of us can figure out goaltending interference, and at some point we're going to go back and look at all of them and realize that it's just all based on how much the goaltender complains. Right away,
it kind of is like the Connor
Hellebuyck got slashed in the face and was like, "Eh,
okay, cool, oh, too bad."
Whereas, as long as you get bumped and wave your arms immediately, so maybe that's what Brad Marchand was going for. This is an issue because I feel like, put aside the dummies who think there's a conspiracy for or against certain teams.
Yeah, there's not that.
There's not. I mean, this league, yeah, they're like, you really believe this league is going to organize a secret underground conspiracy and execute it? Yeah.
Flawlessly, no. Year after year? No, not so much.
It's, but it feels like everybody thinks the officiating is an issue, and they feel like it's terrible every game. It's not like it's a couple of guys or a couple of scenarios. It just seems like, because you're right, every year people complain, how come they don't call the rule book? And every year you're like, if they called the rule book in the playoffs, you would freak out because there'd be 8 power plays for each team and you would lose your mind and you'd hate it. So, like, I feel like I'm used to that. But this year, yeah, it does feel different. It feels like they're mm-hmm. just in... yeah, just...
Like Tampa-Boston, the 4-minute high stick is just... general incompetence that you'll find in the regular season where a stick hits a guy in the face and they miss it and they call a penalty that doesn't exist. That's fine. But you go to the Caps Penguins game 2 where it was Jake Guentzel gets absolutely kneed/tripped by Matt Niskanen and no call. Like, that's always a penalty when a guy's coming across the blue line and he has the puck and he gets tripped. That's always a penalty. And then Devontae Smith-Pelly gets chopped down by, I think it was Chad Ruedel. Like, he gets around him like he does. By the way, speaking of that Devontae Smith-Pelly move, why is every right-handed guy in the Predators able to dance around defensemen coming down the left wing like it's nothing? Like, every guy, whether it's Forsberg, Arvidsson, Johansson, these guys all know how to do the inside-out move and duck. I don't know. It's another thing. But those are always penalties in the playoffs. Always. Because especially they're in the second period. It's not the third period of a tie game and like, oh, we got to let that go. These are all times when penalties used to always be called. And now... That's my sigh for the show.
That was a good one.
I'm so exhausted, man. I am.
What did you think on the Pittsburgh-Washington, the goal that wasn't a goal?
I mean, it was a goal, but you can't call it a goal. Like, it was absolutely... Here's how you know it's a goal. Patrick Hornquist, like, I'm not going to call him a dirty player, but if he's around the crease and the puck's not in the net yet, he's not going to stop. He's not going to pull off and raise his arms and celebrate. Like, he's going to keep driving the puck until it's in the net with the goalie's head, legs, arms, whatever. He clearly knows the puck is in, and that's why he has stopped trying. He's not trying to fake out the referee by putting his arms in the air when he's right there. That's how you know it's a goal. But yeah. I get it. The angles and the parallax and all that stuff.
You got to see it. Yeah. You got to see it. Oh, not the parallax.
Oh, God, the parallax, buddy.
Man, the damn parallax. We've got an entire... generation of sports fans who are convinced that the goal line is like 8 inches under the ice and have like cool animations to show. You need the view that shows that the puck is in, and the view that people keep sending is not that view.
Right.
Like, that's, I'm sorry. I appreciate that you blew it up on your VIC-20 and you've got like 16 pixels worth of evidence here And you're like, look, there's white. And it's like, yeah, but that's the ice.
There's
like
also that. White on the goal line. You can see the white on the goal line where the red should be. So you don't know where the ice snow begins and where their actual, it's just, you can't.
And unfortunately, you've got, you know, we do have the overhead camera angle that can, that is supposed to help. And because of the position everybody was in, it just, so, I mean, to me, this is one of those things where it's like, it's, yeah, the puck was in, but it's a bad break. I don't think it's more than that. Although, you know, and I'll just make this point one more time. Would it kill these guys to just tell us what the call on the ice is?
No, because they can't. Because if they do, I feel like that tips their hand and prevents them from letting, you know, hockey ops make the call for them. If they say, hey, we ruled it on the ice. They clearly, it was hard to tell because there was no point that I saw, like from a referee, but maybe there was and I didn't see it.
He kind of did the arm wave. And I know I've had people say, well, you know, the call on the ice was no goal because he didn't point and call it a goal. So if he doesn't point, like there's no signal for no goal. He didn't point. So that's the call. Well, yeah, except we've seen it go the other way, right? We've seen, you know, and, you know, we've seen that happen. And then they come on and say, well, the call on the ice stands. We have a goal. And you're like, wait a second. Nobody called it a goal. Like, I understand you might get together and say, what did we see? Okay, this is what we think. So just, I mean, how hard is it to, like the NFL, you have to announce that you're going to review anyways, just say the call on the ice is no goal and we're going to review it. Because like, you know, you saw even in that, like that's a crucial moment. You got this entire Washington crowd waiting for this announcement and the official comes out and says on further review, the call on the ice stands and there's no reaction.
None.
Because everybody's like, what? And he's like, so no goal. And everyone's like, oh, okay. Cheer now. But like there's so many things the NHL does where I'm like, you know, this needs to be done better, but the way to do it better is maybe complicated or maybe there's a reason they can't. Like, this is so easy. How, just look at the NFL that have been doing replay better than you for years before you were doing it and just figure, like, what are the basic steps we need to follow? And one of them is you got to tell us what the call is that you're, is it being reviewed?
And it was the same thing too with the Tom Wilson hit on Brian Dumoulin where the referees all got together. And I feel like anytime referees and the linesmen get together and they talk and then they go over to the bench and they talk to each coach, you should probably let the fans in on what you're talking about. Because if like us watching at home, like we get it. Like there was a guy who picked the head and now they're saying was that a illegal check and all that. But if you're in the arena, like even Braden Holtby was talking about that during the review for the goal. They never showed a review at whatever the name of the Verizon Center is now, the Capital Choke Center. I have no idea. Like if you're in the building and you run the scoreboard, if you show the replay in the arena while they're reviewing the play, you're not going to screw over your team. They're already reviewing the play. Let everyone in the arena know what's being looked at and the angles and all that sort of stuff. And it was the same thing. Like, I get it. I don't know what you're going to say for the Tom Wilson play, but you know, if you would talk for 2 minutes and then just point to a face-off circle like nothing happened, that's annoying. Like, you're in the arena. You don't know what's going on. Just be like, hey, after you know, I don't know what you would say. You can't say after review, but let everyone know why you're not calling a penalty. If it's worth a four-person discussion about it, at least, you know, give me the BS line about why it's not a penalty, which I think is funny, too, because in hockey, this isn't like a universal thing, but you basically can't run somebody from behind, right? Like you can hit someone from behind on the open ice a little bit, but generally you can't run someone from behind, and you also can't hit somebody in the head. That's illegal. You can't. It's called an illegal check to the head. But somehow, if you can do those two things at the same time, it's okay.
Yeah,
it's bizarre.
Well, I mean, as we learned from the Department of Player Safety just last night, they released a second video to again clarify the hitting to the head. You can hit guys in the head. There's all sorts of circumstances where you're allowed to do that. And they sort of gave us this 5-minute video of guys getting drilled right in the head that are clean hits. So yeah, I don't know. I mean that Tom Wilson hit, you kind of knew wasn't going to be suspension.
I get it, but it's just it's always the rationale that gets me is like, you know, oh, Brian Dumoulin's position of his head changed. Like, he's not a shapeshifter. His head isn't moving that much. Like, yeah, he pulls up because Ovechkin's there, but it's not as though, I don't know. I just, it's just such a bizarre league when it comes to head hits and stuff like that. But like, I understand that one way more than I understand the Kucherov Vatanen one, but I don't know. I'm a broken man when it comes to playoff refereeing and supplemental discipline at this point. I'm broken. I'm completely broken. I'm like a Leafs fan, maybe you might say at this point.
You're not anything like a Leafs fan. What do you think Nashville, Winnipeg so far? Like, lived up to the
Nashville's been a little worse than I thought they'd be. It's been really good. Like, this is why I think every series is going seven. Like, all these series that are or were 1-1 were kind of even games. I actually kind of think the Capitals deserve to be up 2-0 because, I mean, they scored three goals, the Penguins, in the third period, but I felt like they were all kind of lucky goals. They were, like, Gensel's deflection was a kind of a skill play, but the other deflection was kind of like, whoops, went in the net. And then Ovechkin had the play where he was actually back-checking. He had his stick there, and he happened to slow it down perfectly for Crosby to get off a one-timer. And, you know, the Caps choke, I get it, but that's the one series where I feel like one team has played better than the other. But the other three series, they're all so good. And Nashville, Winnipeg, man, this is why there needs to be a way to have the Nashville, Winnipeg series not be in the second round, because it's so good. It's
happening. We're getting.
Yeah.
Would you rather have, like, Nashville get upset by Vegas in the second round and
it's not gonna happen.
We don't get it at all? Like,
I get it.
I don't know, man. To me, this is like, okay, you're getting what you wanted for Christmas, but you got to open your presents like on December 22nd. Like, okay, that's not ideal, but like, this is the thing that I want. I'm getting it. Get it. Enjoy it.
No, it's like, you're very much like the person on Let's Make a Deal when Wayne Brady says, do you want what's behind the curtain or do you want the $1,000? That $1,000. Give me that. But the curtain could be a car. I don't care.
It's like that, except if, like, I was like, well, what's behind the curtain? He's like, at best, it's $1,000, but just a little bit later in time. I'm like, all right, I'll just take $1,000 now. And that's okay, man. Like, I wanted it at the end of the show, but I'll take it now. I'm happy with this. I've come to accept the goofy playoff format. As long as it serves up Pittsburgh, Washington in the second round every year until the end of time.
And it's all the same thing. That too was the best part about that goal getting overturned, not overturned, I guess, confirmed that it wasn't a goal. But, like, you know, if that went in, the Penguins are tying that game. You know they're going to get a third goal in the next 10 minutes. You just know they are. The Caps. I can't believe I threw my lot in with the Caps. So I don't know what I'm thinking. But yeah, Nashville Winnipeg has been by far the best second round. It's just back and forth. It's just tons of skill guys. Connor Hellebuyck in game one was... And that was the thing. People after that game were like, oh, Predators, you know, the Jets stole the game and all that. And, like, I understand the shots were like 50-2 or whatever, but, like, the goals that the Jets were getting were just these, they were outworking the Preds in front. They had that happen again in game two where guys were just kind of standing around. And yeah, you get outshot 40-19, you're probably going to lose 4 out of 7. But it was more of a skill win as opposed to, like, you know, getting a power play goal because someone on the Preds shot the puck over the glass or, you know, a lucky bounce off of a pad or something that went in. Like, the Jets got three skilled goals in that game before the empty netter. So I'm on board, man. Let that baby go seven and then let the Preds win so I get my prediction right. That's where I stand.
That's right. As long as it goes seven and Winnipeg wins.
Did you take Winnipeg?
I did take Winnipeg, yeah. And then we'll get Winnipeg. By the way, you talk about the Vegas backlash. Wait until it's Vegas against the lone remaining Canadian team. And all the traditionalists come out.
By the way, when is Winnipeg going to let them wear the white jerseys during the whiteout? Is that too complicated?
I don't understand if that's a Winnipeg thing or an NHL thing or what it is. But yes, they should clearly be wearing white. But then again, every team should be wearing white at home because that's better. But what do I know?
You're Canadian. You know more about hockey than I do. That's what I know. You want to take a break? You got any other thoughts? Any other lingering first round thoughts before we come back and do the eulogy? Do the sadness?
Yeah, no, I think that's good because we sort of covered the second round and the teams that are still alive, and then for the second half we will do all the teams that aren't still alive that are busy making changes and firing people and not firing people and winning and losing draft lotteries.
Yep, all that and 7 minutes with Henrik Sedin when we come back right after this.
Thank you. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back. We are now in the post-playoff. Post-playoff? No, that's not the right term. We are in the non-playoff.
The post-postseason.
The post-postseason, where your season was over maybe before the postseason or after the postseason. I don't know. Sean, how do you feel? How's your Toronto Leafs fandom at this point? Because it's been almost, I think, a full 7 days since the Game 7 collapse.
It's been a busy week.
See, I saw you say this. I feel like 2018 was worse than 2013, but I understand why you would feel differently. But lay it on me.
I mean, here's the thing. The 2018 being worse than 2013, like as far as collapses go, there it's no contest. Like 2013 was far worse. Like you to blow a 3-goal lead with 10 minutes left versus to blow a 1-goal lead with a full period where the other team scores like a minute into the third and you're tied. Like as sporting collapses go, it's not even in the ballpark. And people who were trying way too hard to make it the same sort of thing or to say, well, it happened again. I don't buy that. Now, was it worse in terms of what it means for the team? Maybe. Like 2013, that Leafs team wasn't very good.
Nope.
So I mean, yeah, they would have won the series. They weren't winning the Stanley Cup that year, and you could make a case that, and people have made the case that collapse was the best thing that ever happened to the Maple Leafs because that prevented them from fooling themselves into thinking that they had a contender, and within a year you had Brendan Shanahan, and then all the changes that came after that. Whereas this team is good, could have maybe contended for a Stanley. I mean, they would have been. You know, they would have been one of the weaker teams left in the field, but they would have had a shot. And certainly in terms of what they're building towards, getting that extra experience and getting, you know, all of that for the young guys would have been big. So, I can see that argument to say 2018 was worse in the big picture. Just don't pretend that the third period itself was anywhere close to the nightmare of 2013. But at the end of the day, like we said last week, I think we recorded last week before Game 7, and we said the Bruins have been the better team in the series, and they were. And yet, like, the Leafs had them. They had them. They had the lead going in the third. Tuukka Rask wasn't having a very good game. Like, it was there. Like, it would have, they would have stolen it. It would have been a case of the better team losing. But they did have, it was there. And I think I would hope that if 2013 taught the Maple Leafs and their fans anything, it's that you don't overreact to a Game 7. Because the Leafs in 2013 had quite possibly the worst offseason in the cap era of the NHL because they flipped out over what happened in that Game 7 and in that third period. And they went out and got David Clarkson and Dave Bolin and all this other ridiculous stuff. But the series itself did show a lot of flaws, and it did kind of make very clear that this team, for all the talk about how great the rebuild's going and all the talk about how, you know, they're going to be back and they're going to be good and they're going to get there, there's still work to be done. And it's, you know, I'm as optimistic as anyone else, but I am getting a little tired of this idea that there's some sort of inevitability around this Leafs team, because it's not there yet, and there's still a bunch of pieces that need to be put in place, and now we got to figure out who's actually going to be doing it, because it's not going to be Lou Lamoriello.
Okay, so here's why 2018 was worse than 2013. Because in 2013, yeah, the collapse was bigger in terms of the amount of goals, but it felt more like the Bruins got lucky in a way, because you score 2 6-on-5 goals. That doesn't happen. You need to get lucky. You need to have pucks just hit the right spot at the right time, and it happened twice in a minute. So you can sort of, you know, just brush that off. Like, hey, it's a lockout year. We weren't that good. The Bruins got lucky. Best thing for us. But in 2018, like, yeah, it was only a 1-goal lead going to the third, but the 2 goals that they got were just such bad goals. They weren't, you know, fluky. Yeah. They weren't skill.
Oh, you know, like, what? I agree with you, but I'll tell you right now, there's nobody in 2013 was saying, oh, the Leafs just had bad luck. Those were, I mean, James Reimer lost his starting job based on those 2 goals.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they were at the time considered bad goals, and it wasn't just bad. I mean, it was lack of care. Like, he just didn't have
right
character to make the big save. And so that's why they had to go and get the backup goalie from the LA Kings. And that worked out fantastic. So, I mean, you're probably right, but that wasn't the perception at the time. And since that's not how that story gets retold.
That's why I should be the new GM of the Leafs, and Dave Nonis should never be allowed to work in hockey, though. I think we can all agree on that, right? Like, I should be the next GM. Like, forget about Kyle. Like, what's Kyle ever done? You know, AGM?
Does he have a podcast?
Yeah, does he have a podcast listened to by thousands of people? I don't think so. Actually, do we? I think we do. Yeah, we have a podcast that has thousands of listeners, I would say. And the other thing too, just real quick, I don't want to drone on about this. I feel like I'm talking about like someone's like dead parents to their face. Like one last thing about the Leafs though was people going crazy about the Jake DeBrusk goal where he kind of turned Jake Gardner inside out.
Yeah,
you got to make that save, man. Like he didn't dangle that around him and go top corner. He just shot it along the ice, and Freddie's stick wasn't there. Like your stick's there.
That was a terrible goal. And in fact, you know, the thing is, and obviously, like, Jake Gardner had a terrible game. He had a nightmare game. He was very good in the series in the first 6 games.
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't be wearing this as if, you know, they lost because of him, even though there seems like a big chunk of Leaf fans who are going to go in that direction. But I will tell you two things. Like, when he comes in, he kind of turns the wrong way and DeBrusk is coming in, I guarantee every Leafs fan, especially all the Leafs fans who hate Jake Gardner, as that play is developing, they are thinking and or yelling out loud, hit him, hit the guy, hit him. And then he comes across and he actually does, which Jake Gardner very rarely does, and he smokes him. And everyone's like, yeah, oh, wait.
Oh.
Just quit. Right. And then suddenly it became like, you can't go for the hit there. Use your stick, doctor. And it's like, yeah, that probably would have been the better play, but everybody wanted him to throw the hit right there. And he does. For once, Jake Gardner played the way that, like, your grumpy dad wants him to play. and it didn't work, but it didn't work because it was a terrible, but like the first goal of the third period, the long one.
Yeah, it was bad.
I'm still not sure what happened there. Like, if it was tipped or what. But the second goal, I mean, that's just a brutal goal. And, you know, and I'm not somebody who, you know, gets into this, oh, you know, Frederik Andersen, maybe he's not a playoff guy. It's his second game seven. He's given up 5 goals at least in both of his game sevens. Maybe he's not no. I mean, you've got a whole career of Frederik Andersen where he's basically a 918 save percentage every single year. We know more or less what he is, but he was bad in that third period. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes that's just, you know, we can break it down and analyze it. If your goalie has a crappy period, you're probably not going to protect your 1-goal lead, and you're probably not going to advance.
So what do you think Kyle Dubas does? What do you think he's going to do?
I do think he's the next GM
for sure.
It's, you know, in a way it's disappointing that they're moving on from Lemmer. Like, as a Leafs fan, the best possible scenario was status quo. Eh. But the problem is status quo wasn't possible.
Yeah.
There was no Lou Lemerel is 75. He's not going to be able to do this forever. And if you say, you know what, like, maybe in a perfect world, you go, you know, we're just going to keep everything. It seems to be working. You've got Lamoriello's the veteran, the crusty veteran. You've got the cap guy. You've got the analytics guy. You've got the scouting guy. It's perfect. Let's keep it for 2 more years. Well, but they're not going to stick around for 2 more years. Kyle Dubas isn't going to stick around for 2 more years. Mark Hunter might not stick around for 2 more years. So you got to make the call. But what was interesting to me is how apparent it is that Brendan Shanahan did make this call. They didn't even try to dress it up as a mutual thing or as, you know, we've agreed that this is going to, like, it was presented as Brendan Shanahan made the decision that Lou Lamoriello was not the GM anymore. And I know they had the press conference yesterday, and I know Lou Lamoriello said, I'm going to stay and this is my contract. And I don't think he's staying.
No.
It's the same situation played out in New Jersey, right?
He doesn't want to be the president of hockey operations and have somebody else like Ray Sherrill making the calls. But I mean, I disagree with the whole status quo is the way to go. I think now's the time where you want to get Lou out of the way, because if you go back and look at his last few years in Jersey, like, he made a lot of bad free agent signings. He made a lot of bad decisions. Yeah. He wasn't necessarily the same guy he was pre-salary cap.
That's kind of the other piece where, but, you know, Lou sticking around as the mentor, because at the end of the day, you know, Kyle Dubas is guy. He's like 32. He's never been an NHL GM.
He's fine. 32.
Has he ever negotiated a trade? Has he ever negotiated an 8-figure contract extension? We don't actually know, because there's a lot of secrecy over who does what in that front office. So maybe he has, maybe he was the point guy on a lot of this stuff and we just don't know about it. You hope so. I mean, this isn't coming out of nowhere. They had 3 years to figure out how the succession plan was going to work. So you have to assume that they were doing that. But at the same time, there's also, you know, there's been a lot of talk and whispers and whatever you want to call it, that group in the front office, including Mike Babcock, who has a lot of say in this stuff, didn't always get along, and that there might be some either bad feelings, or there might be some, you know, maybe Mike Babcock wants Mark Hunter to get the job, or maybe he wants somebody else. And so it's going to be interesting to see it play out. And I know it's Toronto, so it's going to turn into a soap opera no matter what, because we'll make it into that just so we can talk about it. But like this, you know, I think Kyle Dubas is a super smart guy, and I think he could, you know, this guy could definitely be the Leafs Theo Epstein or Brian Cashman or whatever comparison you want to draw. But there's no sure thing right now. And this is a very, like, I think in 5 or 10 years, when we go back and write the story of the Leafs rebuild, and the story is either called, like, you know, it's either got a picture of the Leafs with the Stanley Cup on the front page, or it's called like wasted opportunity, the story of whatever. Like, this is going to be, the next few weeks is going to be a huge chapter, is how the front office transition worked, who was on board, who wasn't. Like, does Mark Hunter even stay, or does he want to move on now? And who else maybe gets brought in? Do they bring in another veteran voice, even as in an advisor role? Does Lou stick around? There's a lot of moving parts, and like, there's a lot of potential for this to go south. And I don't envy Brendan Shanahan for having to kind of stick handle his way through this whole thing, because they got a lot of smart people there. And in theory, picking a new boss out of a bunch of smart people should be a no lose situation. But I think there's a lot of ways that they could lose. And it's going to be interesting to see it play out in the front office and around the team, and also in the media, where there are still a lot of old school guys who like old school hockey men and are going to not necessarily be on board with somebody half their age taking over the Toronto Maple Leafs.
So my theory, or my principles, my credo, whatever it is the whole, we never know how good an AGM is going to be until he's the GM type of thing, because we don't know what goes on in the front office. We don't know if, like, Kyle Dubas is like, we got to give Roman Polak 6 years. And they're just like, Kyle, that's a really bad idea. Or maybe Kyle's like, no, not Roman Polak. Anybody, because we don't know. We're not there. I assume it's the latter. But I feel like we can both agree that we'd rather have Kyle Dubas running our team than anyone who ran the Atlanta Thrashers, right? Like, that's a no-brainer. It's pretty
simple.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a billionaire, so I don't.
You're not.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if I... If I didn't have like a beloved franchise legend already in place.
Oh, man.
Yeah. What's going on in Carolina? Because here's the thing where, and this is the other way we can beautifully bring this all together. The Carolina Hurricanes, if for whatever reason people missed it, they have now terminated Ron Francis.
Well, his contract. Yeah, and now he's.
Oh, but we don't know. I haven't anyone heard from Ron? Which that in itself, like people just presented that like it was like, oh, you know, they terminated his contract, and it's like, do GMs not have guaranteed contracts? Like, doesn't that sound like something you wouldn't just be able to do unless something else was going on? I don't know.
You think like Dean Lombardi framed him and like planted some drugs on him and
they had sent him home like to work from home. So, I mean, it was like clearly this was a situation where they didn't want Ron Francis involved, but he's also Ron Francis. So they were trying to make it look nice and like a promotion and it didn't work out. So he's gone. Joe Nieuwendyk apparently is also gone, who was one of their scouts. And now the GM search is continuing and Rick Dudley was named VP of hockey ops?
I don't know. These job titles, I don't know, man.
Some title that is not GM. And you've got Don Waddell, who's still there, but also is not the GM. And so we don't know what they're doing for GM, but one of the candidates who's emerged, we talk about Kyle Dubas being the smart young guy being given an opportunity in Toronto. The last time that happened in that market was a guy named John Ferguson Jr. Didn't go super well. And apparently he's now emerged as I won't say the front runner, but as a candidate to be the GM. So clearly, cream of the crop, best of the best. All of the major candidates who get mentioned for every other job are not in the running or have withdrawn from the running. Doesn't this feel like a situation where they're just not going to have a GM? And like they're just going to decide that.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think that's his end game. By the way, I didn't realize it until you actually vocalized it that Ron Francis is basically Milton from Office Space, where they just just keep moving his desk around and they just finally they're just going to not pay him anymore and wait till he goes home. Like this is basically what they've done to one of the greatest players in franchise history, is treat him like Milton.
The guy who was literally the franchise. And you know what? I'm for that, like, don't, you know, just because somebody is a great player doesn't mean he should be making all your decisions. But yeah, you got to think there's either something going on behind the scenes or else this has just been really royally screwed up, because yeah, I don't know.
It's really bad.
Doesn't seem like a
Tom Dundon
a
took
great
my
scenario.
Tom, I believe my stapler is in your office, Tom. I need to get my stapler back before I go home and work from home.
And now, I mean, if we're talking about GMs who may be available, Brian Burke is back on the market because he voluntarily just left in Calgary. His work there was done.
He's done it all there. There's nothing left to accomplish. Time to go back into TV. Absolutely
accomplished, and he's back. He's back in TV, and I don't know. I don't know if you've seen any of his TV stuff so far.
Has he done stuff since he's left? I haven't seen any of it.
He started like the next day, and he started, and he's with Sportsnet, which is one of my employers. So obviously,
obviously,
take this with a grain of salt. But like, he's been really good. He really is good, like, because he's treating it as, you can tell, like, he's still Brian Burke. But he's not on TV just being the character of Brian Burke.
Mm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, there is that point where sometimes...
Like Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm, where like Larry David on Curb is a character of Larry David. Now you see him on TV, he's real Larry David.
Like the extreme where, like, you know, like they'd invite him on for like trade deadline to be interviewed, and he'd be sitting there with like the tie undone, just being cranky for no reason. And you're like, oh, you're doing a thing here. You're okay, fine. And I was worried that he was just going to do that. And he's not.
Is he wearing a tie?
You know what? His first time he had the tie undone, and I think yesterday he had it done up.
So, no.
He's sold out. He's sold out. Ryan.
Good for him. I'm tired of the tie.
But see, that's another thing. Like, to me, like the tie undone thing was like started as a thing he would do like at the end of the deadline, where you're like at some point, and then he would just start showing up like that. And you're like, it's 7 a.m. Tie your tie up. And
didn't Patrick Burke back in the day tweet that like the reason why, I don't know, maybe it was his hair. I remember like Patrick tweeting that the reason why he either does the tie thing or like lets his hair go long is because like he once made a comment to him about it. And so like this was Brian's way of like sticking it to
that
everybody.
Like he was trying to annoy his children.
Yes.
Like kids were like, Dad, you're embarrassing us with the hair. And he was like, all right, that's no haircuts for me now. We're going full, going full on out. So that was,
that's
he's been good. And but rough week for Leaf GMs because Lamoriello's out, Burke's out, John Ferguson Jr. hasn't been hired yet, Dave Nonis, nobody knows what happened to him, and Cliff Fletcher's son gets fired.
Yeah, I forgot about
that. Close enough. So that's the other opening we've got in Minnesota, and presumably like, that's the one where the real candidates are all being interviewed because they're not being offered $6 an hour like they are in Carolina.
By the way, I don't know what's going to happen with Lou, but maybe he does go to the Islanders, but everyone's sort of saying that that's his next stop because his son works there. And I sort of have the opposite take on that because let's say like Lou calls up his kid on the weekend, like, hey, how's it going? How's the job? Do you think like his son is over there going, oh, it's great. I love working for the Islanders. Gart Snow's fantastic. You need to get here as soon as you can. Like, do you really think, like, I get it because like Lou basically lived in this area for a long time. So he'd be coming back home in a way. But I mean, does he really want to work for that organization? I don't know.
I just found it so weird when like when they announced that he wasn't coming back as Leafs GM and everybody was like, oh, he's going to the Islanders. And then he gave the press conference where he was like, I intend to honor my contract, and people are like, oh, so much for the Islanders. It's like, no, that didn't. I'm looking forward to him getting hired by the Islanders and then like firing his son that afternoon.
Yeah.
They're like, sorry, you're out.
You're a big disappointment to me, and this is finally my way of showing you get lost. Boy,
draft lottery, we should.
Oh yes, I almost forgot about that part of it
for a couple of reasons. First of all, what did you think of the because they unveiled the new way to unveil the lottery after our last podcast. So what were your thoughts on that?
I saw you say that you like it. It's so dumb. It's here's
one of the only ones.
Here's why it's dumb. Is it's 2018, right? And you and I are of a certain age where I would classify us as old, or as the kids say, olds. We're olds.
When you're older than the Leafs GM, you are old.
We're old, man. Like, the Leafs GM could absolutely dunk on me if we played basketball one-on-one. Like, I couldn't stop him because I'm just old. It's just how it is. But young people, this is what bothers me about it in a way. In a way, there's many things that bother me about it. The fact that, like, there's no known time to tune in. Tune in, it's between the second and third period. What time is that? I don't know. 9:50 maybe.
Especially since we're going to start the game half an hour after it's supposed to start.
Yeah, I ballparked it at like 9:45, but yeah, I forgot to take into the fact that it's 8:20 and not an 8 o'clock start. But the thing that I think makes it dumb is you could have done it as a pregame show. You could have done it before the start of the 8 o'clock game and just done the A block. Hey, here are all the particulars. Here are the teams that have the best odds. You come back, and in the second part of the show, you do what they did. You do spots, whatever, 16-4. And then at the end, you do spots 1, 2, and 3. You interview the first and second runner-up and all that. And hey, here you go. Here's the draft order. But the reason why I think it's dumb is because in this time we live in, there are, if you're 25 or younger, anytime you want to know something, you can just go on the internet and find it, whatever it is. Like, hey, you know, movie spoilers, news, whatever it is, you can find it instantly. And the NHL is like, hey, we have what you want to know instantly, but we're going to make you wait on a Saturday until 10 o'clock. Like, what young person, like, I'm old, I'm home on Saturday at 10 o'clock, I'm going to see it. What young person is sitting at home watching NBC at 10 o'clock to find out the draft order for the last three teams? It's stupid.
What should they do for the awards? Should they just announce all the awards 2 minutes into the start of the broadcast, or do they turn it into a 2-hour show where you have to wait for the Hart Trophy?
Well, that's a show, though. Like,
it's a show, right? I mean, that's the thing. Like, they don't, you turn on the Oscars, they don't like just be like, here's a list of all.
They don't make you watch a hockey game that you don't want to watch around the awards, though. Like,
well, you should want to watch it. That's the thing. They're trying to get you to watch it. I'll say two things. Like, I'd liked the idea, there were a couple of problems. First of all, like, clearly, second intermission was too long. If they were going to do it, it should have been the first intermission. That was like, I mean, it was after 10 o'clock out here in Eastern time zone. That was too long. And the other problem, which wasn't anybody's fault, is, you know, what I liked about the idea was there were so many scenarios where that those three teams could have really been fun to chew on. And, you know, what happens if this, what happens if that? And we kind of got like three teams that were, it was okay. But you didn't have like, if Edmonton had been in there, if Chicago had been in there, like any of those scenarios, you didn't really get. So it wasn't the best group of three that you could have had. And there certainly wasn't enough there to sustain everyone for a couple hours. But I like, you know, in general, I like the idea. And I'm, you know, they tried something a little bit new, a little bit different. I'll give them credit for that, because this is, you know, we're so sick of the NHL always doing things the same way and never changing it and never trying anything, because this is how we've always done it. So, I didn't think it worked great in practice, but in theory, I was all right with it.
If they had just done it, you know, like let's say they had done it like, hey, we're going to announce it on Snapchat at 9:45, and they got like that bearded HQ trivia guy to do it. I would have been like, that's annoying. But that's annoying for me as an old person. I understand why you would want to do it on this new avenue where there's a lot of young people and all that. But like, just, I don't know, the idea of teasing it out to an unknown time during a game that maybe you don't want to watch on a Saturday night, I don't know. I think there was a better way to do it, but yeah. What do I know?
But good news for the Buffalo Sabres, because they finally win a draft lottery for the first time.
Oh! Before we do that, we should point out that Vancouver wanted to send their mascot, and the NHL said no.
Yes.
Like, why? Why? Why can't we ever have anything fun? Why?
On the one hand, I'm like, I totally get why you wouldn't let them do that.
But yeah, but come on.
I wish, like, just because I would have loved to have seen, because it's Vancouver. We know Vancouver never wins the lottery. Just to see like a stone-faced mascot have to sit there and like, you know,
or if Vancouver,
or if they had
wins.
One and they had to, yeah. You got to like see shots of like Mark Bergevin like chilling on a couch for 2 hours.
To the mascot. And then the mascot wins, and then like Catherine Tappan's like, so what does this mean for your franchise? And the mascot can't talk, so it's all just hand gestures and like nodding his head and like.
I have to throw this out there just because it's for years. That they've been doing this, and it's always the same, right? It's the 15, almost always the GM sitting there just looking dour and unhappy. And my wife has been pushing this idea that each team should have to send one super fan, like their most annoying, obnoxious super fan, to sit there, and then we get those reactions. And you know, just like guys just jumping out, like throwing things and swearing and celebrating and like crotch chopping in the direction of the rival who just lost the lottery.
I like it.
But I mean, it's not mascot good as far as ideas go, but I think it's better than the only good moment that it's ever produced was the time that the Leafs lost the lottery and like Burke was that like it was four guys just sitting there stone faced and then like Brian Burke with his head in his hands. Looking like he wanted to murder the world.
Or like Connor McDavid when Edmonton won the draft lottery and he was just like,
that's what we need is a live, like I want a live shot and I want him like hooked up to like, I want a heartbeat monitor. I want all of that stuff. Good. Finally, some good news for Buffalo that they desperately needed a defenseman and now they got one and Phil Housley gets to coach the next. I was going to say the next Phil Housley, but that would probably make Sabres fans mad because they want something more than that.
They like somebody who can, I don't know, Phil Housley. At my age, I was only old enough to see like the end of Phil Housley, so I don't know how good he was in his prime. But I remember like as a Devil, I was like, we traded for this guy? Like, oh, this guy doesn't do anything on defense. He was like what Erik Karlsson, people thought Erik Karlsson is when he's really not. That's what Phil Housley was at the end.
Yep.
Comparison. You want to do some questions?
I think we hit everything, so let's do the... Let's do the reader mail.
All right, I got one. So we're both football hockey guys, and Zach Buffington wants to know, NHL versus NFL refs, who wins and who calls penalties? Wait, what does that mean? I thought he was asking which ones were worse. NHL versus NFL refs, pick a game, who wins and who calls penalties?
So like, they each other in something and they need to be...
I don't know.
Officiate it. See, this is the thing, though. Like, doesn't every sport think its officials are the worst? Like, is there any sport where people are like, yeah.
There's a level of bad that's acceptable, I think. Like,
I feel like NFL, NHL, and NBA fans would all say they have the worst officiating. Baseball.
Yeah, but here's the difference for me. The difference for me is that in football, like when they screw up, or in baseball when, like, you know, umpires are calling balls strikes and strikes balls. To me, they're not doing it to affect the game. You know what I mean? Like, no one ever calls a strike in baseball when it's a ball because of, like, right. It's a certain time of the game and they feel like they can't.
Because it was
a
3-0 count and right. You just have to. Yeah.
Like in football, like the Jaguars Patriots game, like the referees botched that game. Like the Miles Jack play where he stripped Deion Lewis and then wasn't touched and got up and ran it back, but they blew the play dead. Like they don't blow the play dead there because they want to keep the game competitive. They just screwed up. While in hockey, it feels more like a choice, and that's what bothers me. So that's my latest rant. There's a question about the Sedins. We'll get to that one at the end. Exchange student one. I love Twitter names. Who do you think is the best player to never win a Stanley Cup? Is it Ovechkin already, do you think?
Already? Oh, man. It might be. Because Marcel Dion is probably the go-to answer, I think. There's Gilbert Perreault. There's really nobody from the original six era just because of the nature of that. I mean, I think Dion would be, I would say Marcel Dion right now, but Ovechkin is certainly cool. Like Ovechkin is going to be that guy by the end of his career easily, unless he wins the Stanley Cup.
There's probably a Ranger in there. They went from 1940 to 1994 without winning. Like Harry Howell, yeah. I don't know how he compares to Alex Ovechkin.
Not too many guys stuck around, right? Like there weren't too many lifetime Rangers. Like, you know, Lundqvist will get in the discussion. Luongo will get in the discussion. Goalies are a little bit weird, but I'd say Dion's the guy. And the other thing is Dion is like Ovechkin. He never even got out of the second round, I don't think so.
Yeah, Ovechkin's been really unlucky / bad / running into Ovechkin feels like the Patrick Ewing of hockey where like he kept having to play Michael Jordan in the conference finals. And it's just like, well, you know, Michael Jordan's going to beat you. And not that Sidney Crosby, I don't know. I just it doesn't matter.
Don't you feel like at some point Ovechkin's going to get hurt and like?
Oh, you are so mean.
And then, but then they, but then they win without him, right? It'll be like the actual, like you mentioned, Patrick, like the actual Ewing theory. I'm not saying they win without. Like I'm saying they win the series, right? Like let's say they're playing the Penguins. He gets hurt in the next game. Oh, he's going to miss a week. They come back, win the series in six games, and then like he shows up midway through the conference final. Mm. We all blame him for like. Doesn't that just feel like a very Washington / Alexander Ovechkin thing to have happen?
And then this way, Caps fans aren't suffering anymore, and we can still make Ovechkin jokes. Yeah, I can see that happening. Let's do one more. Jason Waterfalls. This is a good one. Odds that these players leave their current teams this offseason: Tavares, Carlson. I should say Erik Karlsson, because William is now so famous that we need to distinguish.
Right. Not the good Karlsson. He means
the other Karlsson. Okay. Yeah. Tavares, Karlsson, Oliver Ekman, Larson, and Henrik Lundqvist. What are the odds that those four guys leave their teams?
I'd say Lundqvist, 10% at best. I don't see that going. Ekman-Larsson.
Ekman-Larsson feels like he's not going. I would say
25% maybe. Like his odds should be higher than I think they are. Like that feels like, you know, a situation where you look at what's happening with Tavares and other guys and you'd want to get ahead of that. But I think he sticks around.
I'm going to say Lundqvist is, I put him at 15. I think I put Ekman-Larsson at 10. I think I put Erik Karlsson at 97, and I put Tavares at like 64, because there's always that chance he goes out to the market, doesn't find what he likes and comes back. But I think he wants to go.
I think it's probably, I'll put Karlsson at, I'm going to put him at 85%.
85. Okay.
Because I still think, because he also said in the offseason, right? Like you could still see a scenario where, I mean, he's still under contract for one more year if they don't get the offer, or they don't have the guts to take the offer, or they bring him back and kind of kick the can into the season.
Love kicking the can.
Kick that can. And then, Tavares. Yeah, 60%. That sounds about right. I think we're leaning into the more likely than not range right now, but there's still a long way to go on that one. Let's see what Lou Lamoriello can do as far as getting John Tavares signed.
Yeah. Well, folks, another hour in the books, another joyous, happy celebration of hockey has come and gone. Just want to thank our guest, Henrik Sedin, for what was a wonderful interview. I'm glad we can finally put that to bed and you know, finally get that talk out of the way. You want to pitch? You want to sell anything besides the actual Biscuits podcast on iTunes, where you can rate us 5 stars and leave reviews? People like that stuff.
Bunch of stuff on Sportsnet this week, including, I think today, Tuesday, the annual favorite, the ranking of the old guys without a cup. So we go through the remaining grizzled veterans who have never won.
Who's the youngest old guy on the list? Who's like the new young old guy?
I put Ovechkin on the list for the first time this year.
Oh boy.
He's only 32, but he's been in, my cutoff was you had to have been in the league since for the entire cap era. So he made the list,
so
even
sad.
Though he's still, yeah. And plus he has gray hair.
He does. So he does.
I feel like he's okay.
A little salt and pepper.
So yeah, that's out there. People seem to like that one. So we do that every year.
Mm-hmm.
And other stuff later in the week.
Yeah, that's me too. That's our code for, yeah, we haven't figured it out yet. So, but we're going to do stuff later in the week. And next week, we're still figuring out if we're going to do the same day as we always do, or maybe we might do it Wednesday or Thursday. We kind of have to see how the series break, because the way it works out is there's a game 7 on Tuesday, then there's 2 game 7s on Wednesday and 1 on Thursday. So if we do it on Tuesday, it's kind of pointless. But if there's no game 7s, then it's perfect. So the playoff schedule makers don't care about our podcast schedule, which is really offensive to us.
We spoke to them about it and they
just blew us off.
Yeah.
Not cool. But we will be back next week, and just follow us on Twitter and we'll tell you when we're going to record, and we'll see you then.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.